Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey everyone, it's Red Men Originals podcast time. I'm Paul Machen, alongside me Chris Pairjack, on the opposite couch Chloe Bloxham, Dan Clubb, all with big smiles on our faces because Liverpool have won another game of football.
Get it, Red.
Just boss. Just why didn't we do more of this last year? Why didn't anyone think? Just don't be crap. Be good. Win game. I mean, have your crap moments, but then ultimately be good and win. That's definitely the way to do it. Right, we are going to be talking about the last game, the 3-1 win over Wolves. We're going to be talking about the evolution of Mo Salah as well. I'll have a little mention of the last game toward the back end as well. But before we dive into that, all of us, every single person involved in the podcast today, travelled down to London on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the four of us and Aaron, who's producing, got up at 5 in the morning, got taken down to London in effectively a minibus, and played in a five-a-side tournament. How are we?
Played.
Yeah, well, we took part. How are we all feeling? Chris, how are you feeling?
I'm a lot better than I was yesterday, which was better than the day before, I'm still a little bit sore in places. I've now officially retired from football, I think.
We'll see.
Yeah, again, just saying. Like, you know what I mean? I am officially retired now. I have not felt so bad as I've felt the last few days. Like, I don't think ever, to be honest with you. And I include when I broke my nose in like multiple places and when I broke my arm in this I've never felt so bad scenario.
Incredible stuff. Chloe, how you been doing?
It wasn't good. My ankle swelled up. Thankfully, that's
did you have a bump on your head, actually?
No, I never. I did take one to the head, like, didn't I?
And then screamed at the ref.
Yeah. I thought you were about to give a foul. I was like, what am I supposed to do there?
That was the pitch at which you argued with them as well.
Yeah. There's dogs running all over.
Thankfully, yeah.
Yeah, 2 hours stood in the same place watching the Reds, and the first 45 minutes where, like, my ankle was just stuck stiff in one position didn't help, as well as the stewards. I asked, you know, where's the away end here? I was right outside the away end and he told me it was the other side. So me hobbling on my ankle did 2 laps of the entire stadium before finally finding the
grudging respect of the week to that steward, by the way. That is just like needle for needle's sake.
But yeah, I'm doing fine now. Reckon I should do a workout today, but I hope my ankle swells up again so I don't have to.
The real barometer of this is how is Dan Clubb doing, because Dan is the fittest. Well, Dan and Aaron are the fittest amongst us. We noticed you struggling at the time. Oh.
Struggling isn't in it. By the fourth stroke fifth game, last game that would have been, I was in a whole world of pain. Like, as we know, 5 o'clock in the morning, as you mentioned, we got up. That 5 o'clock was fine for me.
You've been in the gym by the time you came here to be picked
up. No issues. Getting up, no issues. Getting here, no issues. Sprightly, I'd describe myself as. By the second 5 o'clock of that particular day, less so, I was a broken man. You're right.
By the second 5 o'clock, me and Paul were doing something very bad on the side of the road.
Just to clarify,
weighing just before it, that could
be. I have photographic evidence that will never see the light of day on that, by the way. But yeah, oh mate, I was in a whole world of pain. Like, I did so much running, a crazy amount of running. I did a half marathon earlier on this year, and I could only really relate it to that and the pain that my legs were in. It was just gone. There was moments whereby if the pass was overhit by half a yard, that wasn't mine anymore. If my touch was wrong by half a centimetre, that ball was gone as well. It was just, and what really made it sink in for me, because you're right to mention Aaron, Aaron's also incredibly fit and active. In the last game, when he was sat on the floor and went, I just can't do it, and then went off for the rest of the match, like, right, okay, we are struggling here now. And then I played cricket Saturday, obviously, and by my, obviously, I think about 15 overs, and people who know cricket will know what that means, about 15 overs consecutively, and the captain came up to me and said, right, you can stop now and then come back later and try and win the game for us, or you can carry on. I went, if I stop, I am not coming back, because I will seize up within about 5 seconds. So yeah, but all good now, thanks, I'm all okay.
I think that's really interesting, Paul, but how did your Sunday go?
So yeah, I spent my Sunday in the Old Swan walking, having my blisters tended to, because they were bad, like, they were really, really bad. I mean,
going to a walking for blisters, there must have been some blisters.
Even I didn't do that.
It was mega to the point blisters. Well, the thing is, because I had to get up and get on with my day on the Saturday,
little TNT prima donna over here, can you sort and blisters out, please?
Yeah. I was getting blasters on.
But it was a point where I couldn't walk on Friday night, and I'd said, I was like, here we go, biggest moment of my entire career, and I can't walk. I had different shoes on for driving, that's how bad it was. Like, wow. I mean, I couldn't trust the shoes that I had.
Did you go for trainers or sliders?
I had trainers, but like, yeah, they're basically like slippers at this point, they're that old. But yeah, horrendous. So I spent 5 hours. They're not fine, they're all right. There's nothing horrendously bad with them, they're just really painful. But yeah, not great. Because this is the way, when you've got no skin left on both balls of your feet, and both big toes, you stop. But that happened after the first three games. And I took my sock off and went, oh God, Chloe let me some blister plasters. I've had to put them on and just had to crack on.
You know, and then it was by the end, my toe was in agony and he's all the only fucking blister plasters.
It was really hot, wasn't it? It was dead hot.
Oh, it was bad.
There is videographic evidence of how this went.
I think we should not.
It's coming out later this week, but we're going to give you a little taste of how this went. Yeah, two days,
a finish and a half, that mate.
2 days from now, the Red Men Originals Five-A-Side Special will be launching over on Red Men Plus. So if you want to see how we coped,
just to say, by the way, for everyone watching, it was walking football.
It was from our team. No, sadly, we couldn't get anyone else to agree to those rules. I tried.
I had signed off with the purples on a 1-1 draw if we just didn't play the game. No one took me up on the offer.
I had the greens, and the greens said, yeah, we can take a 0-0 walk football. And him over here was like, no, can't do that.
That was the game my legs gave up as well, ironically.
Anyway, yeah, if you want to see us playing five-a-side football, then please do check out Red Men Plus this week. Wednesday, therefore, 19th, 20th, yeah, Wednesday. Yeah. Wednesday, that's going out, so yeah, hope you enjoy that, dear me. Acast, Jason Hardy asks, on our podcast providers, so yeah, we work with them, they host our podcasts, all the audio versions of this show are hosted by Acast over on all you big podcasting apps, basically. So yeah, good people invited us down to make absolute pricks of ourselves. Thanks so much, look forward to next year's tournament. Right, last game, Wolves 1, Liverpool 3. Chris Page, after the first half, Liverpool were fucking rubbish.
Absolutely pathetic, wasn't it, to be honest. Neto just had an absolute field day against us. That's pretty much all I can remember from that first half, is him running in behind time and time again and running past fellas and whipping the ball across, and he was just unbelievable. But I think the biggest thing about the first half, and I'm sure everyone will have picked up on it, is that, like, within 2 minutes Joe Gomez was in the, you know, in that sort of box midfield, and everyone was like, oh my days, really? Is this what we're going to do here? And then as the half went on, it wasn't just Gomez, was it? It was Szoboszlai at times, it was Kurt Jones. We were trying to manufacture a box midfield, and that kind of made sense for Gakpo being in the side in the nine, because he was dropping into the middle of the park and stuff. And so we were looking for ways to sort of continue to play the same way as we have been, but without Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I think at half time, Jürgen just went, yeah, fuck this. This isn't working. And that's obviously a little bit gutting. You obviously, Jürgen now, I feel like, just with the way that we started that first half, is very much, this is the way that Liverpool are going to play football. And that's like the hammer in the, you know, the nail in the coffin of the 4-3-3 formation. But after that first half, I'm not sure whether he can continue with that plan anymore. Like, it's like, okay, maybe it's like Undertaker back from the dead type of stuff for the 4-3-3 now, because we were so bad. And, you know, I think McAllister, unfortunately, was poor. He looked absolutely shattered, like. But at least Jürgen made the right decision, and at least you can see that we've got a squad now where you can actually effectively change games.
Well, yeah, that was it. I was going to say, Claude, there's a temptation there, I think, to slaughter Gomez, to slaughter McAllister, Gakpo. I mean, honestly, I thought he was wearing like Harry Potter's invisibility cloak or whatever in the first half, because basically didn't do a thing apart from have one moment right toward the end of the half.
He had like three shots, didn't he? Yeah. He skies one, he heads one over the bar as well, and obviously scores before going off.
But I think the thing is, it's whether there's a wider context to it. What were your thoughts? Individual mistakes, a wider issue, what?
A bit of everything. The sloppiness on the pitch, it was like no one can complete a 5-yard pass. The ball was always too short. It was hospital balls, is what I'd say. There were so many players instantly under pressure, you just knew the ball was getting taken off you straight away. It was like we weren't awake. Half of them were still, you know, maybe on different time zones, thinking that they were still in bed, because that's what it was like. And it was the midfield where we just couldn't gain possession. Liverpool tried, but every time we passed in and around the midfield area, Matheus Cunha or someone would come and press us and win the ball high up the pitch, and they'd be on the counter. And with the situation of Joe Gomez cutting inside, and sometimes there was always Pedro Neto in behind on the switch. Craig Dawson did it, which led to that Matheus Cunha miss, which is absolutely outrageous, by the way. That is possibly the funniest thing that happened all
it's
game.
It's the worst miss of the season so far.
Liverpool just looked all over the place tactically, but also there was no one who really just turned around and said, give us the ball and just let me have it, calm yourselves down, get into position. And that was what it was like for the first 45 minutes. I think I sat there and thought to myself, this is actually potentially worse than what it was like last season here for me. The only difference was they failed to put the ball in the back of the net more than once before half time.
Yeah.
We have a flurry right at the end where someone makes an unbelievable block from Salah's shot.
It was Dawson.
Yeah. And then the keeper saves Szoboszlai's left-footed shot. And that was like, okay, but there's chances there. You can clearly see we've found a way to unlock them. And then in the second half, it was Liverpool went into second gear. You just couldn't touch us at all. And the way we recycled the ball, the way we won it back up the pitch. I will say, and we'll probably get onto him, but Kwanzaa in that first half was my best player. He just was, especially in the defensive situation. And in the second half, you know, when we had better lads around and they all rallied, shout out to Robertson, who took it personally in the second half and ran absolutely all over the place to really get us the 3 points there. So yeah, it was a contrasting to half. Absolutely shocking first half, but absolutely brilliant from Liverpool second.
Well, yeah, we'll come on to that, Dan. I think it's been mentioned by both the guys there, the various different bits and pieces, like Joe Gomez effectively playing in midfield. Look, there'll be games where it's not the end of the world, because I think he's a very composed footballer. He is good on the ball, but then when McAllister looked like he'd been playing in space 36 hours earlier with, you know, needing oxygen just to live. Szoboszlai was slow off the mark to everything around it. And again, to Chloe's point, it felt like last season because there was no legs in that midfield at all. It all felt really slow and sluggish, and they were high tempo, they were high press, they were high energy, and we couldn't live with it. And I suppose that's almost the... I think Klopp must have been looking at it going, oh God, Christ, not this again. But then again, to go to Chris's point, the beauty is we've actually got more lads this season. So we actually were able to effect a positive change really early, and that's how the game changes for Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but it was very reminiscent of Liverpool after a break and after an international break. It was almost like we're trying to prove Jürgen Klopp right by being so annoyed by putting us on at half 12 and playing absolute crap for 45 minutes, because we were just miles off it. Like, you're right, we were so sluggish, so off the pace, and just there was no rhythm to what we were doing, disjointed, nothing seemed to work. work. I was absolutely adamant. I did a predicted lineup before the game, and I was certain we were going to go back to the 4-3-3 just because of the personnel. But we sort of hammering home the box and the fact we want our right back or indeed our left back to go in there. Obviously, it was never likely to be Tsimikas. So you've got to go with Joe Gomez. And I agree with your point. He is comfortable on the ball, and he's got a lot of quality on the ball as well. We've seen him deliver really well from the right back when he's done that. But there's one thing having quality and being composed sort of in a defensive situation, but doing it in midfield, there's a lot more bodies around you. Everything happens a little bit quicker. That's
with
really
the tempo
difficult.
That they were coming out of.
Exactly. And the lack of tempo that we had. Yes. Joe Gomez was never likely to be the one to grab that game by the scruff of the neck in the midfield. It's just not going to happen. So he was kind of onto a loser, whatever happened there. But yeah, Liverpool were miles off in 45 minutes. But the fact we could change it and we got the personnel to do so is really important. And I think it's important because we always sort of highlight with like Luis Diaz and Darwin Nunes how box office they are and just how they can have these mad moments to just impact games. Diaz especially, we're very sort of big on him just having these crazy things and being so skillful. But those two between them, Diaz particularly, have come on and really changed the direction of travel of a football match there. Yep. So we should give him a lot more credit for that, because normally, like I say, he has these flashes of inspiration. You go, God, he's boss at that. But he's actually come on and grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck and changed everything about it for me, and that's really important.
What was really good is that Liverpool didn't go into the shells, Chris. We actually, you know, it's a really positive change to take McAllister off, and it's mad because we've had a couple of games now where people have gone, well, why is Endo not playing? Because our understanding is that Liverpool's midfield was crap last season, so we needed like a ball winning midfielder. Well, actually, we took an even more defensive one off and ended up with a double pivot of two wingers in Szoboszlai and Kurt Jones. Put more attacking lads on the pitch, and I suppose it was a bit like, well, just double down on the energy, double down on what we're good at. And I wonder whether there was a little bit of rope-a-dope in that as well, where Wolves did come flying out, but their legs fell off after a while as well. And then all of a sudden, as I said, well, for the vast majority of the second half, up until probably their late changes, Liverpool just bossed it.
We did. The biggest sort of improvement for me, and the guy who I probably thought was one of our worst players in the first half and one of our best in the second, was Szoboszlai. Yeah. I mean, we talk about like McAllister and all that type of stuff. Yeah, his legs were heavy, but like Szoboszlai in the first half, when I was doing the watch on, he was at 65% pass completion at one point during that half. Like everything he was passing was too short or wide on the mark, and he was
when he flicks it and then he gets annoyed with himself and he does it well and then he passes away and he goes, oh,
what are you doing? Like, yeah, he was terrible. And like, it would have been so easy to sub him off, or it would have been even easier for him to have just gone into his shell, and yet he just took control of the game, and him and Kurt Jones were absolutely superb. The big thing for me was that like we pinned their wingers back by having two wide players. We made them think, actually, I've got to defend more than I've got to attack, and keeping Joe Gomez in situ meant that Neto got nowhere near as much joy, and he wasn't able to get as far forward because of us basically playing a pseudo 4-4-2 formation in the second half. You know, Harvey Elliott on that right hand side, Diaz on that left hand side, and Salah and whoever was up front with him for the period that you want to talk about, obviously Nunes for the latter part of the game. That changed absolutely everything for us, and it gave us a platform to build on. And then it was about, Klopp's always said this, you know, when we won the league season, it was like, people know the press is coming, but where the press is coming from and when is how we keep evolving. And it was Kurt Jones and it was Szoboszlai from deep joining the press of the forward players that was catching them off guard all the time, and we were winning that ball back, and then it was all about Diaz and those driving runs and beating a man and, you know, intricate play on the edge of the penalty area. And it was just night and day from the first half, but it all came down to the fact that after 45 minutes, Klopp had seen enough and had an idea and a plan, and one player and that one tactical tweak was able to win the game for us. And then obviously the lads who've been good for Liverpool over loads of years then had to step up and show the new boys what to do.
The thing that he saw was Alexis McAllister in the fetal position desperately trying to suck oxygen into his lungs, the poor little get. There was a bit where the ball broke down and he ran back and you could see he had nothing. And this was like half an hour odd into the game and you're like, yeah, you're done. You're absolutely done. Well, Chloe, have you thought, I don't know if you've considered this, but I did wonder why he went with that. Yep. Like, why start McAllister? You know he's knackered. I get, like, Diaz and Nunes starting on the bench. So starting Gakpo and Jota makes perfect sense. I'd have expected that. That was what I thought was going to happen. But to then to go with McAllister, What do you think his overall? What was he aiming for here? Because quite clearly, McAllister, it must have been obvious that he was goosed from minute one.
Yeah, I think we were all shocked. Everyone, when the team news came out on the bus and everything, was like, we all expected McAllister not to play footy. And I don't know whether it's because they haven't seen enough of Wataru Endo, whether he doesn't understand the system, whether, you know, we saw it against Aston Villa where he put McAllister at DM because he knew he wanted to control the game more and have, you know, a front-footed DM who could control it from there. And maybe he thought the same against Wolves. I don't know what data analysis has told him to put McAllister in that game of footy, but I think all of us before kickoff could have told you that's too soon. So there must have been some sort of science or someone in Jürgen's ear to say, yeah, he's okay to go. Whoever that was looks like an absolute idiot at half time after you've just seen what he did for 45. But it did tell me something at the fact that Wataru Endo didn't start the game because I expected, you know, I expected that sub to be made, or and Ryan Gravenberch was not the first thought in my mind because it was so soon. First game, you don't want to throw him in at the deep end. We know Jürgen doesn't like doing that. Where Wataru Endo's had, you know, a couple of 30-minute spells here and there. He started against Newcastle. You thought, okay, so maybe he does trust him a bit. But I don't know why it was that they decided to go with McAllister. I'm going to say that someone got the data wrong and accidentally it was someone else that they were looking at.
To be honest, I can understand it. I really could. I mean, I know the distance is crazy and stuff like that, but I think, if you'd have asked me to pick a side, McAllister was in it because he's been one of our best players. He does control the ball. I think the big problem is that the first half didn't go how we expected it.
Yeah.
You know, if Liverpool are on the ball, then, you know, heavy legs or not, he can make do. He can pass the ball around and all that. But he was running back all the time and Liverpool were running back all the time. And so it just didn't end up being the game for me.
The thing that also, and like this, I don't think this comes into it, but a lot of people in the away end were saying, Jürgen Klopp just needs to stop talking about half 12 kickoffs because you're setting a mentality for those players to use it as an excuse. You're telling everyone before the half 12 kickoff that Liverpool aren't up for this, and you're setting, and whether they believe it or not, you're creating this kind of thing that everyone can bid into and use it as a slight excuse, or maybe feel that half 12s actually are the
thing,
they should
be. The thing
be.
For me on this, on the half 12 thing, by the way, because obviously, given that I was with the broadcast company on the day, there was a lot of talk around it because Jürgen Klopp makes it a huge deal. Certainly did last year, and he obviously bit James Pearce's head off in the pre-match press conference this week over it. And the point is, I actually thought this was the clearest example of what he's been talking about the whole time. And Alexis McAllister was like the poster child for it. Of like, as I say, when it was like 2 a.m. Wednesday morning, he was playing a game at altitude, and then he's playing at half 12. So he gets into England probably Thursday.
4 a.m. Thursday, you said it was.
You know, and then so there's not, you're not training, you're probably not training that day. They travel down to Birmingham, I think I was told on the Friday, whether I don't know if that's true or not. So he's not really had time to rest or train in the midst of that. And you could see there's a guy who played too much, who'd overly exerted himself in the middle of it. But I don't know what the answer is to that, because Klopp has to talk about it because he needs it to be a big deal. He wants people to be scared to put Liverpool at half 12 now.
Well, they're not.
They're doing it after the next international break of the
like
derby.
12, the next
12
six.
We've played and Spurs have played 6. That's the next highest. Yeah. It's absolutely insane. It's just criminal. It really is. And Klopp, by playing McAllister, might have been proving a further point, because you're right. He was sort of he would have been the least sort of favourable 1-2 play, given what he'd been through, the altitude and all that. I was wondering, by the way, with Wimbledon's altitude, the way we were running around last week. But I was surprised at McAllister, personally, I was. And I take your point, Chris, and I think had the game gone the way it was, because if Villa were better a couple of weeks ago, if we hadn't have been as good, perhaps, potentially a better way of putting it, maybe it might have been a similar circumstance, because McAllister defensively, I think we've all still got question marks about it. I think we're not certain he is the answer at 6, certainly not in a game whereby you don't dictate possession. I think we'll see him sort of have a bit of a difficult time, if that's the case, let's put it that way. But I was shocked it was him. I was, because like I say, what he'd been through in the week just didn't make any sense to go with him at all.
There's a few comments on this. Abin Nash says Klopp doesn't trust Endo as a starting number 6 yet. The other day was ideal for this start, and I think that's fair. We were discussing this in the office earlier, where we kind of like, it's a bit mad. That's two games on the bounce now where you could have reasonably expected him to start. It's too early to make a cast iron judgment on it, but it does feed into, for me anyway, that notion of he's been bought as a footballer. He's not necessarily been bought as a first 11. That being said, I'm sure it's been mentioned in other comments, but it did take half a season for Fabinho to get up to speed, but then Fabinho was, what, probably 24 at the time? What do you think?
I don't think we've got half a season to play around with Endo, personally. He's not the long-term answer. So if you're not going to get him up to speed for the half of this season, it doesn't make any sense to me. That doesn't mean... We needed him to come in and be an immediate answer, an immediate sort of stopgap, because I think next year we're going to go out and buy the longer term answer.
Yeah.
So you haven't got that time to sit and wait on him. You've got to use him when you need him. And to me, not necessarily the Aston Villa game, because as I've proven in hindsight, we didn't need him in that game. But Saturday was the perfect opportunity to drop him in and go, do you know what? We know you've been away international duty, but the lad we'd like to play ideally is McAllister. He's knackered. It can't be him. I don't care what the scientists say. I don't care that he sat there telling me he's fine.
Yeah.
You've got to go and do a job for us. And he didn't. So you do have to raise eyebrows as to what exactly is going on there.
The end of the thing, just a counter point that you get. Bama Lam in the comments says Endo was also away in Japan, jet lag is just as bad for him. It wasn't actually. Japan's home game was actually played in Belgium during the international break, so he's played the games, but he hasn't got like the distance, if that makes sense. Because I was wondering that as well, to be honest. And just one more from Alistair Mellor here on the topic says, I don't understand Klopp's insistence in putting McAllister in the six. Surely Szoboszlai is the guy for this position for the time being. Chris, any thoughts on that?
He's definitely got the skill set. I mean, his work rate and his tackling seems to be good. I mean, there's obviously something that we don't understand, isn't there? Because I could look at both of them and tell you that they're both not sixes, to be honest, and they're both better further forwards. It's one of those things where I think, in the pure layman's terms, right now it feels like McAllister in the six at home, and away from home, maybe not McAllister in the six, but sort of riffing off what Dan was saying there, the questions have to be kind of asked about Endo is he good enough? Because sometimes you can bring a player in and you think they are, but when you bring them in and you see them in training, you think, well, actually McAllister's better. Could it not just be as simple as that? That McAllister was better in the one training session, and then he's decided that McAllister's a better footballer than Endo, Klopp, and he kind of goes with it.
Yeah, well, Klopp said that in the past, hasn't he? Because we go, Klopp's got his favourites. His favourites are the ones who work the hardest and are the best of footy, ultimately, in every training session. You know, Mo Salah, I think it's like weird, like we think, oh, Mo Salah just in because it's Mo Salah. Mo Salah trains at that level every single time. So you're right, he does. We think he's got these, like, oh, these guys just get picked regardless. Yeah, but because there's a merit that's earned every single time they pull on a bib or whatever during the week. Tariq Satam here with the Super Chat says, can you please discuss why the team doesn't show up with the same urgency in the first half? What's stopping them to show dominance from the start?
Honestly, it's dead simple. They love a late winner. Love it. And the fans prefer it that way as well.
Yeah,
there's a synergy between the team and the fans, really, isn't there, Clown?
Yeah,
there's nothing better.
No, absolutely not. That Robertson goal went off again. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And also, like, we are talking about the team with the only one team's got a better defensive record in the league than Liverpool this season. Which is a bit mad, really.
That's
isn't
hard
it?
To
like,
believe that.
It's fucking shocking, isn't it? Like, you know what I mean? We've only conceded four goals. I think City, three. I think there's another team on four goals that have conceded four as well. Like, Manchester United have conceded 10 so far. Like, I think the thing is, we are conceding early doors. We don't seem to be switched on right at the beginning of games. We're making it difficult. But the difference between this season and last season is there is a belief rumbling under. You can feel it in the crowd. You can feel it in the players, the manager. There's now this, it just feels like we're onto something with this group of players, doesn't it? Yeah. And like, it doesn't matter. I was saying this, I think it was maybe to stay at the weekend. Like, it's something you've said for years, really, is like, you know, Liverpool have been built to beat teams who park the bus, but you've got to beat the teams who are attacking us like this so that they do start to park the bus. So actually, in the fullness of time, it might be better. Teams keep coming at us, we keep snotting them, and then ultimately they go, right, well, we can't attack them like that anymore.
Yeah.
we're going to have to sit back. We're going to have to play some defensive football, and then you might see the real Liverpool.
No, absolutely. Look, we made a change and put and got rid of the lad who was falling apart and put some more energy into the midfield. But again, putting Szoboszlai and Kurt, it's kind of counter this idea that you need a hardcore. We needed a hardcore DM to stop that game from turning around. We just put two really competent, energetic, confident, ball carrying footballers in the middle of the park and went, just all you're going to do is just sit on the halfway line, and when the ball breaks, you'll pick it up and then put it back in. Keep it moving, keep it ticking over. Obviously, Szoboszlai did it in a bit more of a expansive way because I think that's the level he's sort of at. But like, I don't care. This was really good.
But he had the players to be able to hit, didn't he? You know, I mean, first half, Robertson wasn't getting forwards. You think of that ball that goes over to Robertson, is it? And then maybe was it Diaz who had the header off Robertson's cross? That ball wasn't on in the first half. Robertson or Joe Gomez weren't making those runs, and all of a sudden you got two players who have the ability to hit passes and spray the ball wide, and then you've got the willing runners. I mean, Robertson was just excellent. He was back to being that left back that we've seen for years because he was given the license to play that position.
Yeah. The other thing was in the first half, no one was being direct. You'd see Jota pick up the ball and he wouldn't run out of the defender. He was either waiting for the overlap or the ball just kept going back into the middle of the park. Curtis Jones was free so many times. There's a specific case where Joel Matip doesn't put a ball out wide to him and he's in acres of space, and it's because you didn't have the likes of Trent who could ping a ball like that, and they were all a little bit too worried to risk it. When Luis Diaz came on, what he instantly did was, I'm pinning you back. Yeah. He ran directly at them and made them scared. They couldn't touch him because it could be a foul. He was going into the penalty area. He didn't know what way to go because he's so silky on his feet, and that's what we didn't have in the first half. In the first half, it was either Curtis or Jota hugging the touchline, and none of them were making the runs in behind. None of them were, when they had the ball, taking a man on. None of them wanted.
And the only times we did is where we looked dangerous right towards the end of the half as well, where someone would make that little running behind. No, I agree with that. It's I just thought,
think back to last season. If we'd have had Trent and Virgil van Dijk missing in the form that we were in last season,
we'd have got battered in that game.
Absolutely.
Regardless of whether they were not, by the way. Yeah. We didn't have the mentality to come back last season. It wasn't there.
Yeah.
That'd have been the same what happened there last year. We got absolutely twatted left, right and centre.
Yeah, well, as it is, you then bring in lads on who were chomping at the bit to actually get on. You know, every single one of the lads that came onto the pitch was desperate to go out there and get on it. And that's evidenced by mainly by Elliot's celebration, I think. But it was, I say the problem is, I think stylistically, first off, it was just off. Yeah. So no energy, and it goes back to what Klopp's kind of been saying. It's about the press. It's about the energy. It's about having the levels to get up there and get in people's face and stop that stuff happening. And again, I felt a bit sorry for Gakpo because he's been messed around all season. He spends the first two games of the season playing in midfield. Now he's back in the nine, and he did a nothing. He didn't do his proper false nine bits because he wasn't getting deep and really getting on the ball and then turning it round and moving forward with it. He wasn't holding the ball up, and then he wasn't then doing the number nine. So the only, he gets his goal because he behaves like a number nine. Salah gets the ball and he makes a beeline for the goal line, and he's there to stick it away. And it's a bit like, but Nunes is doing that all day long. And it was interesting. I'm only parroting something that I heard in commentary really, but I thought it was an interesting point of like, Nunes is easy. Because you know what he's going to, you don't know what he's going to do because he's nuts, but he's a centre forward. He's going to run on. Gakpo was a bit disjointed, I think, from the whole thing. But again, the beauty is we put it right. You know, we can sit and go, we didn't get it. We got it wrong. It was last season we were getting it wrong and losing. This time we ended up winning. We win comfortably, ultimately, because they had nothing from the second half onwards.
The other difference is Gakpo. None of our lads could trap a ball a first time. None of them. Gakpo, him and Salah were trying to link up and the balls were just getting intercepted every single time. Darwin Nunes came on and he just put his arse into the defender and said, nah, I'm just keeping this ball here. And he did that time and time and time again.
And when he missed control, Chloe, he went straight after it as game.
And he did it, and it's specific for Harvey Elliott's goal because he is the one who shields the lad off, turns with the burst of pace, runs in behind, does a ball to Salah, which is, you know, I think it's a sound ball. Salah tries the first time pass over to maybe Luis Diaz, doesn't work, but it was Nunes holding a man off and then doing him for pace and getting off and setting us away. And we didn't have any of that in the first half because no one could trap a ball, no one could pass it 5 yards. Where in the second half, you had a lad up top, he was the target man, but also could carry the ball and get him behind. You had Diaz going straight at people. And then Salah, who just has, I mean, his assist for Robertson is outrageous. That the way to pass the outside of the foot, he's just ridiculous as well.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Mo in part two, but Dan, you know, the goals, you know, particularly the turnaround goal, as it were, from Robbo.
Yeah.
Seeing him with the captain's armband, you know, he has been a bit maligned. I said on my post-match video that I've spoken quite a lot about how I'm just not sure where he fits into what Liverpool are doing. But Chris touched upon it earlier. The senior lads really just went and grabbed the game ultimately. And he doesn't score many, but he does seem to save them for big moments.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, it turns out he fits in on the right side of the attacking eight, doesn't it? Making lung busting runs into the area. No, it's
Ian Robertson.
Yeah, it's a really well taken goal. It really is. And the way he opens his body up, and Chloe's right, sort of reference the weight of pass, and the vision from Salah is just exquisite. He's definitely in his playmaker era, isn't he, Mo? It's just so good to watch. He's not bothered, it seems like. He doesn't need the goals anymore. He's quite happy just to set everybody else up.
He shows you, doesn't he?
Yeah. But yeah, the goal's brilliant and made up for Robbo. And you're right, like, I was critical of him. I was critical of him all summer in a roundabout way, just because I wasn't sure what his season was going to look like anymore. I didn't know where he fit in. And Chris referenced it earlier about the fact he was able to do normal Andy Robertson type left back stuff in the second half. That's great for him, because when he does that, we know he's brilliant at that. We know he's among the very elite and the best in the world at being a proper left back who gets forward. His delivery is outstanding. The few balls we're putting on the weekend from an advanced left back situation that were just out of the top drawer. He's so, so good. He really is. But when he has to tuck in and be a left sided centre back, you go, I'm not so sure. But yeah, made up for him, massive moment, and he just kind of found himself in that situation. He kind of broke down, didn't he? Thought, oh, I'm here now, I may as well go for a little run. Then
Salah to sky those ones as well, which was helpful.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he can't blaze that one into the crowd, can he? Can't really get that, because it's the wrong side of the boot. Yeah, which is probably, like I say, worked out for the best. But yeah, great moment for him, obviously, like you say, captain on the day. And yeah, he deserves it, because he has come in for some criticism, not necessarily always of his performances, because performances, he had a hard time at Chelsea, but since that, his performance has been pretty good. But there does remain this question mark about what is he going to be, but it turns out he's still just a proper boss footy player.
I just like the fact that you hinted at it, Chris. We go back to a back four, and Gomez is a very good right back in a back four, and I contend if we flip the inversion over to the other side and he was just playing how Ben White plays for Arsenal, I think he'd be brilliant in that, because he can do the flying fullback stuff just as well as Andy Robertson could do. He's great at crossing on the run as well. But it felt like we had balance back to the sides, and it meant we could hurt them in any way, basically.
Yeah, that balance is the right word, isn't it? Obviously, you play a back four, everyone knows how to play a back four, whether you're a centre-back playing out of position at right-back or whatever, everybody knows. Everyone knew how the midfield was set up, because everyone's always played 4-4-2 as they've grown up. And then the forwards, it was just about creating space. It was about Diaz creating space for Robertson and stuff like that. So the balance was there. Robertson was absolutely superb on one side, Gomez on the other. Special mention, you know, Chloe said it earlier, but Quansah and Matip I thought were brilliant. Mm-hmm. I think it was likely that Quansah was always going to play the left side of the centre backs, but putting in between the captain and a really experienced player in Joel Matip as well, and Robertson just talking him through the game and talking the entire defence through the game. It was a real captain's performance from him, but Quansah was fucking excellent as well. Like, just time and time again, he steps up in those moments where, I mean, it's hard not to draw comparisons to Virgil van Dijk, because he's just dead calm.
Yeah.
Nothing seems to phase him, does he? And hopefully he gets to a level that, you know, is any near how good Virgil van Dijk is. But what a start to a Liverpool career. Like, I mean, is that his first start?
Yeah.
Away from home, in a game where you go behind, you know, you've got a non-traditional six ahead of you. You know, you've got...
No captain, no vice captain.
I mean, it's a hell of a thing to do what he did.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Let's do Elliot's celebration, Chloe. How did that feel?
It was brilliant. It was...
How close did you get to him?
It's not... I think I'm like... Obviously, yeah, he was there. We were pretty
who's
close.
Taller?
Not close enough. Me. Yeah, just a bit. I'm fuming that it's not being given as goal. From where I was, it obviously looked on target. It wasn't, apparently. But yeah, it was Slider. Brilliant. The release of the emotions. And it was boss, because it was just him and Curtis who got off into the crowd, and they'd all stood there like, No, I've just ran.
Someone put the foot on the horse and said, like, was it Canati on by that point? Maybe. Somebody like goes, I might do this, and then go, no, I don't like the look of that. Yeah. I don't like the look of that.
It was boss. People just falling forward. There's some bad photos of a couple of people in that away end. But yeah, it's what it's all about. A lad who supported Liverpool all his life, getting the goal, sealing the 3 points. And by the way, it wasn't just his goal. He was brilliant when he came on the pitch.
Yeah.
The way he controlled the ball. There was times, and he was on the near side to me, and he wins the ball back, and he goes to go back, and then just drops his shoulder and gets off, and we're all like, get in! And it's like, all he's done is dropped the shoulder and got off, but because he's done a defender, and like, you could just feel the build-up, you knew a second goal was coming. We loved it, and his passion is, he's one of us. His finish, would have liked it to be on target, so it's actually his goal, but I'm giving it him anyway. Would have liked it
to have been Salah's assist as well. That's the other reason for it, isn't it?
Definitely.
Elton John was in the crowd. Did you see him? He enjoyed it.
Elton John was doing great.
Felt a picture. Everyone's going wild. There's a fella who's the absolute spitting image of Elton John just sat there smiling like he's happy, but he's just,
A few bits of his quad bots, and Harvey is one of us. And that was actually a point I was making. It was something that Alfie Brown brought up on Thursday Night Pint last season about how, you know, you've got him and Curtis, and, you know, if you're, and obviously Trent, but, you know, if you're a young Scouse lad growing up, seeing young Scouse lads in the, who were born Liverpool fans in the team is just amazing. It feels like there's a genuine pathway there, even when you retired from footy, Chris. But Harvey Elliott is that for Liverpool fans who weren't born in the city of Liverpool. So, like, these two lads who just love the football club, it's their boyhood dreams to be in that team and doing it. And I've said it on my video, Harvey Elliott gets it for me. I don't care if they don't actually get him. I'm giving him that goal. He gets the celebration, he gets that moment, he gets to be with the fans. It's joyous stuff. You need things like that. I've said it for years, you should go round World Footy and just buy Liverpool fans. You know, we had it when Torres was there, you know, the old armband thing and all that. You know, Robbie Keane, I mean, he supported 15 different clubs, but, you know, there's something to that, because you do get it. We joke about it all the time, about these lads who, like, local lads who never really get better than the games they play for the Reds, because you get more out of you when you're playing for a team that you're desperate to play for. Yeah, I thought they were great. Can and I Rachel just... Todd there, sorry, just saying, Harvey and Curtis came together. I mean...
Yeah, Rachel.
Whoa. I don't know about that. Yeah, it certainly looked like they had a good time.
Was that after? I didn't see that.
Go on, Cloud.
It was a disappearing two. Snapchat, I think, that one might
Stop saving it.
Speaking of those two, there's a couple of people who were fuming. No, on social media, that is. I looked at some of the comments on across the channel, and people fuming at the fact that Harvey Elliott and Curtis Jones have got yellows, telling me that they were going to cost us for down the road. And I was like, lads, if you can't understand, like, I laughed, we all cheered when they got booked.
Yeah.
Because what a way to get booked. If you're going to get booked for anything, make sure it's that.
No, oh, yeah. Well, it's, you know, but it is the thing. I think people live in this constant fear of, like, what might happen, and every action you take might somehow lead to some negative repercussion down the line. Just living the lives. Just scored, in Harvey Elliott's mind, he's just scored the goal that's put a really stressful game of football to bed for the Reds. Obviously scored against them last season as well. He's you know, he's on the periphery of the team. He wants to go on, and I bet, like he was almost said, go on there, go make stuff happen for us. So now he gets to go, yeah, look, I made that happen for us there. And yeah, no, brilliant. If he wants to run the crowd, I mean, the second he did it, I will admit, he go, well, that's just a yellow card, that, isn't it? But
it's because you're old.
Because I remember, like, funny enough, I remember Ian Robin doing it. Was it against Sunderland, maybe? And he went and stood on the board, and that was one of the first examples of, like, a player being booked for excessive celebration or whatever. And then after that, he made it a very, or that was in the first one after,
they
made it
afterwards. As well,
I would much rather them get booked for that than taking their shirt off. As they run to the corner flag.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, if you're going to do something, fucking at least enjoy it with the fans. Yeah.
Keep your shirt on.
You know what I mean? Keep your shirt on and fucking do that. Like,
that
taking the shirt off pisses me off, because that's just stupid. Why did you do that?
Apart from the it's led to the stat that Mo Salah's been booked for taking the shirt off more times than United have scored
also,
against us.
He just wants to flex his body now.
You don't get many messages on a vest these days, do you? That used to be the old thing. You used to get, like,
some
kind words on a vest for somebody. You don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
Bring it back.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
But Elias Boss, and I just want to say as well on him, he's done that, you just said there, so go out there and make something happen. He's done that a lot this season, like almost every game. And he must be desperate to get a start. Hopefully he does in the Europa League, and I'm going to come on to it a little bit later. But if any lad who has been on the periphery of our squad this season deserves a start, it's Harvey Elliott. Like, he's been superb every time he's been called upon. That was another example of it.
I do think that goes back to one of the reasons why we're in no rush to move McAllister out to the six, by the way. It's because we've got, all of a sudden, now that there's a lot of lads fit and fresh, we've got lots of lads who can do some really interesting things from the eight positions or wide attacking midfielder positions if we switch to that formation again. So, yeah, good.
The balance of the midfield against Villa was the best it's been all season. Mm. And I think it was because Kurt Jones was playing there along with Szoboszlai and McAllister. So, you know, if you are going back to the first point, I suppose, that started all this off earlier on, is that, like, if you see that as Jürgen Klopp, why wouldn't you just pick the same midfield again?
Yeah, absolutely.
The role of Jones is fascinating to me because he's doing a very uncomplicated job and he's doing it very well, but he is such a flamboyant flair type player that he's almost going against his natural instincts in this, and he's going, because I've got Szoboszlai, who's just boss and his levels above in what he can do and how creative he can be, and McAllister in there, he's almost having to rein himself in. He's doing it brilliant, like I say, but every fibre of his being must be going, oh, I can do a little bit of that and a little bit of that. But he's not, he's keeping it very simple. And there will be moments, and there'll be times, I'm sure, in games whereby he'll produce something you think, wow, he's got that in his locker. But that's a really good thing. It's a real positive as well.
I liked seeing, like, the camaraderie between him and Szoboszlai on the pitch, like laughing and joking, hands and shoulders, and, you know, and after moments in the game, like talking to each other, because that'll be part of that. Because there's something to this Szoboszlai, and he's, you know, they're the same age, aren't they? But Szoboszlai is just seemingly further along in his career. And look, only in an international sense, you know, captain of his country and all. I'm sure Curtis Jones will probably look at these, you know, his Champions League appearances and all that kind of stuff, and it won't feel miles behind him. But he's a new lad coming in, and Kurt is playing a bit of, like, this is my team, you're coming into my team, I'll make sure that I temper what I'm doing. But that's maturity. The one thing that everyone used to criticise Jones for was not quite being mature enough in his game. So his opportunities will come. I mean, we haven't seen those moments like we did last season where he's, the ball's dropping to him inside the 18-yard box and he's finishing stuff off. But we know he can do it. His time will come. At the moment, we should just be glad that we've got a bunch of lads who are all seemingly really enjoying the football, having a great time and impacting football matches. Chris, one thing I said again on a post-match video was, I had real Villa away 2019 vibes from this one.
Is that the one where Robbo scores?
That's the one where Robbo scored. Robbo and Mane scored at Villa Park, and it's far too early for that. And again, you know, that was months into the season, and it helped us maintain a healthy gap over City at the time. But if Liverpool, I don't feel any sense of pressure on Liverpool's season really at the moment. I'm very much convinced that it's Man City's title, and it'll be Man City's title to lose. there's lots of other clubs having a really good time, Spurs in particular. We'll talk about them on Bias podcast in a bit. But you've just got to keep it going. And something about Robertson cropping up in a game in the Midlands where you've gone a goal down and you're looking a bit crap, and then someone who doesn't normally score digging out for you. I don't know if we'll be talking about this game in months to come, but you know, we've got the option to because we won it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a togetherness to the entire squad, I think, at the moment. And you know, I saw players on whatever they call inside Anfield when it's away from home, and they're all like
inside Molineux.
They're all like, you know, going up to McAllister at half time and, you know, putting an arm around him or a little tap on the shoulder and all this type of stuff. And that's the type of thing that's coming across in the performances, isn't it? They're all in it together. Shout out to Dom Sobber, aside from that inside Anfield or whatever it's called, by the way.
Inside Molineux.
Everyone turns up.
She just told you what it's called.
I think you just call it inside. Okay. Anyway, everyone turns up in trackies, apart from Dom Sobber, who turns up in shorts. And, you know, my big guy. Fucking Bluetooth headset, wired, white, Apple fucking headphones, wired. I mean, talk about a fucking legend. You know what I mean? None of this fucking Bluetooth shit. He's probably a COVID conspiracy theorist or something like that. You know what I mean? It's like some kind of Bluetooth's going to kill you type of shit. But I just love the fact that I'm joking, by the way. If you want to do COVID, whatever, sounds, it's fine. Headphones, wired, absolutely brilliant. Completely lost my trail of thought now.
He's got a good... So maybe he's thrifty. He's like, these work perfectly fine. Yeah,
I came with the iPhone.
It's harder to lose one because it's wired to the other one. It's like mittens. Brilliant. Right, okay. Can we move on?
Yeah.
Excellent. Before we do move on,
though... I don't know what's just happened.
Didn't know where he was going. Fair play to the Wolves fans because they sang a round of poverty chants, which was, you know... Not just like a staple. But then, approximately like 2 minutes before we got our first, they started to sing God Save the King to us all. And then from that moment on, it went all downhill and they started leaving the ground pretty soon after.
Yeah.
But that was brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, look, all the credit in the world to Gary O'Neill and Wolves. You know, there's a little thing where they had 2 weeks there to get ready for this. Mm. And that was probably the worst time to play Wolves in this run of games. There might come a time where they're more solid and he's got his ideas across late in the season where there'll be more of a threat. But like, you know, what is it? First game of the season, and then that's probably the two best showings they've put in where he, you know, they've had a little bit of something in the build-up to it to come out on top of that, you know, good atmosphere in the ground, you know, high energy, high tempo team. Liverpool could have been blown away. Credit to them and credit to Wolves. And yeah, ultimately 3 points to Liverpool, which is the most important thing.
And you know, the thing about the 12:30 kickoff, of course, is that like we now get an extra day's break, which is great. And going into the next game, so if you can get over these hurdles, then you do reap the benefits on the other side of things, don't you?
Yeah. The other benefit was for a little second there, we were top of the league, and it was great for those. Maybe
hour. I was doing the fan interactive and I went to go to the league table and Man City kicked off and the fucking website had given them a point. So I went, I'm on top of the fucking second. Damn it, Man City. And I thought, bastards.
This is it again. We're 5 games into the season now. So far, so good. Miles better than we were a year ago. It's nice. You know, I'm going to talk about Spurs and Ange Postecoglou and all that kind of stuff on the Bias podcast. It's nice to enjoy it again. Yep. It's nice to actually go into a game of football. I must admit, I was a bit trepidatious at times when you're a goal down and you're just thinking, oh God, you know, I hope this isn't going to be more like the other one, because this was the game. You know, Brighton is a big game of football. Tottenham is going to be a big game of football. You know, there's big teams we're going to have to come up against. This was the one where you take your eyes off the prize. This is the one where you'd expect to just come and steamroll these because of all the problems they've had. So, yeah, to ride it and come out the other side on top. Yeah, boss. Absolutely boss. Right, more to come from us in part two. We're going to be chatting around Mo Salah's performance and whether we're seeing an evolution in his game for the Reds and a little bit on Lask as well as Liverpool return to the Europa League on Thursday in a bit.
Hey guys, how would you like to get your hands on this? A signed shirt. Yes, it's a Ian Rush signed Candy Liverpool retro shirt. What an absolute amazing prize this is. Liverpool's greatest ever goal scorer has signed it for us. And we're going to give it away to one of you lucky people to enter that competition. It couldn't be simpler. Simply become a Red Men Plus legend subscriber. Yes, head on over to redmenplus.com. Sign up as a legend, either on a monthly or yearly subscription. You'll get access to all the amazing content, content as everybody does, but you'll also get some added perks, including access to the Discord and entry into each of these monthly competitions. Last month, we gave away a shirt signed by Kostas Tsimikas. This month, we're given a shirt signed by Ian Rush. So yes, redmenplus.com, become a legend and get in the draw to win a brilliant prize that any Liverpool fan would want in their lives.
And Chris is back.
Easy,
baby. The couch is. Can you?
Yep.
There we go.
I might have jumped into the seat.
You nearly went through the wall.
Just done myself an injury.
That, yeah, definitely. Just to put an exclamation point on your football retirement.
What's as long as the one on the side of the motorway? Definitely not that long. That was crazy long, that one.
Yep. Right, let's talk Mo Salah. Yes. Chris, you all right? Can you breathe?
Yeah.
Cool. Salah, 6 goal contributions in 5 games so far. More assists than goals, 4-2. If Harvey Elliott's one hadn't deflected, it would have been 5-2. Do we think we're seeing, I've got a maturation of his game, but, you know, an alteration? Is just, is this him becoming more mature? Is this tactical? Is this just circumstantial? What do you think?
I think it's all... It's difficult to say right now, isn't it? We're only a few games into the season, but it does feel like he's relishing this sort of role as a creator as well as, you know, he wants to get goals. I've got no doubt about that. But he might be looking at other records that he hasn't got, like the Premier League assist record. I think it's 20 or something, isn't it? You know, that looking pretty tasty for him right now and stuff like that. I think he's just a consummate professional, to be honest, and he will just do whatever's needed for the team. I think it was always overplayed that, like, you know, he's ball greedy and all that type of stuff. There are situations where he's still greedy and he's a creator. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there are times when he's just going to get his head down and try and dribble past, because him beating a man means that we've got a much better chance of scoring a goal after the fact. But what I will say is I definitely feel like his passing in the final third has improved. Cobby mentioned it earlier, that ball for Andy Robertson is like, it's messy level shit. Like, you know, you just don't expect that from Mo Salah. And yet we should do, because he's got that skill set and he's always had that skill set.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think we saw a little bit of this last season, Chloe, at the start, where we were wondering, like, what are they doing with Salah? Like, he was playing very far wide on the right. Obviously, we were trying to get Nunes into the team and it didn't seem to make a great deal of sense. We know what a wonderful creator he's been. If he's not our top assistant, he's our second top assistant most seasons. But I do wonder whether there's just something here where he's just got lads around him. Like, to be fair to Bobby Firmino existed to make things work for other people. Whereas now all of a sudden you've got Darwin Nunes there, who he likes and he wants to get on the ball. And he's got other people around him, and it's almost like he's decided to play a bit more of a, I mean, elder statesman of 31 is probably a bit of an exaggeration, but it does feel as though he's, I don't know, like he's enjoying his role at the club of not being the guy who has to score the goal, otherwise Liverpool aren't going to win the football match anymore.
Yeah, I think he's just realised that like you mentioned, Bobby Firmino was the one who sacrificed himself further up the pitch. The lads who he's got around him now, they're running him behind. They're trying to help him. They're in the same spaces. We've saw the link-up play so far with Darwin Nunes and him for the start of the season, and I've really enjoyed it. Them understanding each other is massive. You've obviously had Luis Diaz there who's now getting back into it after a big injury. And I think Mo Salah's just realised that if there's a better option, I'm going to do that, because A, I back them, but B, I still get headlines. I am still the main man. Look, Robertson, we're all sat here talking about a great finish, like he's a left back, but we're all talking about the pass. We're talking about the skill set of Mo Salah still. And you could see, I never want to understate how massive Mo Salah celebrated after that Andy Robertson goal, because he knew, he just wanted to win. He knew that Liverpool winning was the most important thing. And I don't want to put a downer on it, but if this is his last season at Liverpool Football Club, he wants to go out with a bang. He wants to get headlines. He wants to break records. He wants to win silverware. And to do that, he still needs to be incredible, and he is being incredible. It's not on him all the time to constantly score in finding. And first of all, in that first half, he got had off by their left back, by Ait Nouri. Ait Nouri did really good against him in 1v1s. He couldn't get past the lad. And then in the second half, with the on runners and making pushing their defence back, he got more space. He ran in behind a bit more and he used the players in and around him. So yeah, I think it is just, it's him being a little bit more mature, realising that it's not always on him. We've brought in players who are goal scorers. Diogo Jota, I think we all think of as, you know, the best finisher out of all of the strikers that we have. He knows it's not the Salah, Mane, Firmino show anymore. It very much is just get us the 3 points. We're not that same team, we don't play that same way, we're still adjusting to new systems, and Mo Salah will still get you 30 goals plus this season. He just will, because he's Mo Salah. But his creativity is incredible and underrated as well.
There is something, I wonder, Dan, that Erling Haaland's just going to win the Golden Boot, isn't he?
Yeah.
So there's, you know, almost like it takes a bit of the pressure off. You know, let's just have everyone. If we can't get the top goal scorer, let's have like second, third, and fourth. And you know what? Let's top the assist. You know, find some way for Salah to really feel like he's contributing. And maybe that's me. I'm not saying that's necessarily how he thinks, of course. But I think there is certainly that to contend with. He could score 30 goals this season and get nowhere near the Golden Boot. So you might as well put all your efforts into making sure that Liverpool just get the games won, no matter how.
Yeah, that's always been his top priority, obviously, hasn't it? I think the goals have always kind of come with it, but his goals were so integral to us winning football matches previously. Certainly from the minute he came in, really, he was the main man. Sadio Mane, very, very impressive goal record on the other side. But for me, it is a personnel thing more than anything. I think there's definitely an element of Salah's matured in his game, his appreciation of what's going on around him and his use of the ball and that type of thing has definitely developed since he's been at Liverpool. There's no two ways about that. But for me, it's the fact that as brilliant as Bobby Firmino was, he's not there anymore. So he knows he's not going to receive. And I think Gakpo's done a pretty good imitation of what Firmino does and can offer, but he's not Firmino yet. So Salah's not going to be getting the same level of opportunities that Firmino was able to produce for him. So I think it's just a case of he's got Nunes. Nunes is going to be breaking the neck to get in the box, in around the 6-yard box. We've seen glimpses of it last year, the Real Madrid goal, for instance, where Salah found Nunes and Nunes flicked it, that type of thing. Salah knows now he's got those lads, Jota, Chloe mentions, Diaz even at the back post against Chelsea. We've seen that, and we've seen Nunes running behind against Newcastle twice for Salah to assist. So I think it's a very much a personnel thing. I think Salah, he might have kind of taken a step back from his wanting to score type mindset, but he will get his goals. His goals will come. There's no two ways about that, because he's just a goal machine. But it turns out he's just a winning machine, and he's just absolutely desperate to win. And like I say, the fact that Mane's not there now, helping out on the other side, we might not get the top goal scorer this season, but if we can en masse, I think your prediction, Chris, was to get 100 goals in the Premier League this year. If we can en masse produce that, who knows what we're able to achieve. And Salah, whether it's with 35 goals or 20 odd assists, he will be an absolutely key part in us doing that. And seeing the way he plays now is just a joy to watch, because the fact he's able to sort of be a bit calm in possession, because every time he got it, I remember watching him getting quite frustrated. He's run down blind alleys, but he's capable of doing like he did against City or Watford. He's capable of that, of course he is. But now he doesn't need to do it anymore. He can take a step back and just find these runners like he did with Robbo, and it's just so, so good to watch.
He's so good. I mean, it's not like, again, it just gets so underrated, his creativity, because the goals are things people talk about that gets remembered. But like, look at the passes he's playing, and they're not the only ones. You know, I've seen, you know, the outside of the boot pass is ridiculous. There's
one to Mane against Watford, sorry to bring that up. That's an outside the boot beauty, that was
exactly. So he's got that in there, and there must be a little point where he's kind of like, I feel like someone sat down and had a bit of like a, you know, you have a calm conversation with someone and you really get through to them and you're like, wow, I've really got this. It's like, mate, you don't have to run. You can just pass it to someone and they'll score and you get to celebrate and Liverpool get to win. You're going to get your goals, you're going to get that headline moment, but it's loads less tiring just standing there and kicking it to someone else when they're doing the running than you having to try and dribble past seven players. It feels, and I'm joking obviously, but it feels a bit like the post-AFCON Salah. Like every time he goes away with Egypt to major tournaments, he's the best player. So it's all on him. And I feel like sometimes it takes us a little while to get him back out of that mindset. And we're going to have to, because he's not got the pace anymore. He isn't the fastest player on the pitch. Most teams have now got fast fullbacks. You know, he's not going to come up against, you know, Dan Byrne every week, is he? You know what I mean? And be able to sort of roast him. So he's going to need to change his game. He's in his 30s now. It'll add longevity to him as well. I just like Chris. I mean, the beauty is that he's good enough to do that, because we've seen fast players, you lose the pace and that's you. Whereas, I mean, he could be this Salah he could do 5 years of being this, Sally.
Yeah, it's also how teams play against him, isn't it, as well? I think, you know, early doors, we used to see a lot of teams play two players against them, a midfielder would drop in, a full-back. I don't think we're quite seeing that as much anymore because I don't think teams fear him in quite the same way.
Wolves certainly started that way. They put a lot, they had a lot of bodies on him from the early, but yeah, but it can't carry on.
But then later on in the game, I think they got quite comfortable just leaving Aitnori there and going, you know what, if you're going to beat him, because even then, you're outside of the penalty area, you're still going to have to beat other players and stuff like that. But it's having that understanding that I don't need to beat my man every time. I can use the ball, I can let that do the work. And if people do tend to bring two players over to me, then there's space somewhere else for somebody else. And that's the cleverness of the experience of being a little bit older and having all those games under your belt and just knowing what's around you and what that means in the context of the football match.
Yeah, Thor here in the comments. Outside of the boot for Mane, second versus Bayern. There's another great example.
True, yeah. Just on that, Chris, you said there's the opposition doubling up on him. Do you think opposition managers can afford to do that now? Because obviously we've always been a very good side under Jurgen Klopp, of course we have. But when you look at our midfield now and the attacking weapons we've got from there, can you afford to leave Dom Szoboszlai on his own? You know, previously it might have been Henderson. As good as Henderson was, he didn't have the weapons of Dom Szoboszlai, did he? So I don't think you can double up on Mohamed Salah too much anymore. I don't think that's an option, because if you go over there, you might be leaving, like, say, Gakpo, Jota, Nunes, Diaz, leaving them open, or Szoboszlai, Curtis Jones, McAllister. It's just never ending. So you can't. Salah was so much the main man, he was such a threat, and he still is, of course. But you could afford to go 0-2 on him because you knew you might be leaving the Henderson a little bit of space. And it's a thing, but it's not a thing. But now it's like, I can't leave him on his own because he could do anything.
Well, it's different when you've then got to get the ball over to Mane, where maybe they've left it a little bit threadbare, and you just move over, don't you? By the time the ball's got to Mane, you've reset. Whereas if you just got to play a 5-yard pass inside to Szoboszlai or Elliott, who's now completely unmarked because that guy's got over to press Salah, I think it's a problem.
Also seeing them double up on Diaz quite a lot since he's been at Liverpool, which has left, you know, Salah more free, and maybe they are a bit more worried about Diaz now when they come up against him, just because he loves to cut inside and he's got the finesse, he can do it on both feet. Where Salah, I always think when he gets the ball, left foot, even the assist the other day, it was the outside of his left foot. He's so heavily left footed, where Luis Diaz, he's got the skill where he's, you know, cuts back on different feet all the time. And I've seen him be doubled up against, so maybe it is a change in there.
Okay. I think the thing for me is if I was like looking at Liverpool, or, you know, and our manager was looking at Liverpool Football Club, I go, well, how did he beat you in the past, Will Salah? Right, well, listen, you're going to have to beat us without Salah. Mm. It's as simple as that. He's your best player. He gets all your goals. I'm going to make the others work for it. I think now there's a little bit more where it's spread a little bit more evenly across the team. It's like, what is Liverpool's best way of winning football matches? I don't think we know that this season so far. I think it might end up that it's Nunes over the course of the full season or whatever. Manchester United is probably an easy example. Don't let Rashford beat me. And then they haven't really got the players anywhere else who could step up, certainly last season. It's an easy decision for someone who's game planning it, isn't it? You know what I mean? Just take their best player away and force the shitter players to step up. Yeah. Now, you want those shitter players to step up. And, I'm not saying Liverpool's players are shit here. It's a way of me saying, like, Dom Szoboszlai stepped up already and scored a goal. Harvey Elliott stepped up and scored a winner. Robertson stepped up. And Liverpool have got the players to step up. Now, you've just got to trust those players as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we talk about the short blanket thing. If you're overcommitted, men in one particular area, it's going to leave you threadbare. It's about being smart and capitalising on that, and as you say, having the lads in the right place at the right time. And let's be honest, it's just, this is one of the parts of the evolution of this side. The Szoboszlai Henderson one is a prime example of that. Jordan Henderson wasn't a great goal scorer for Liverpool, popped up with some important ones every now and again, but we remember his goal against Chelsea vividly because that wasn't an archetypal Jordan Henderson goal. If Szoboszlai can get like up close to 10 this season, then that's a significant improvement, and it means, yeah, we are, it's, that's us fighting back. That's us going, okay, well, you're going to shut this down. Well, how's about this? Now, what are you going to do? And that was the beauty of the front three. When the front three really clicked, it was an old Bobby the Brain Heenanism. But if like the left one don't get you, then the right one will. But the left one don't get you, the right one don't get you, the middle one will. And then when we had a Jota, it was like, well, if any one of them gets tired, then we're going to bring Jota on and he's going to get you. And now it's like, we've got six lads for the attack. We've got like four or five lads who can play in the attacking midfield positions who were all capable of scoring goals for us. Pick your poison, fill your boots, lads, because they're going to score against you. It's as simple as that. Just out of interest, obviously very early doors, but in terms of combined goals and assists so far this season, Erling Haaland's on 8-7 goals and 1 assist, but second highest in the league, in the Premier League so far, is Mo Salah with his 2 and 4. Julian Alvarez and James Ward-Prowse, funnily enough, are behind him on 5. Just a slight mention for Julian Alvarez, who's absolutely ridiculously good at football. Yeah. I really wish he wasn't.
Can you have a little look for like most chances created and stuff as well?
I mean,
okay, I'll have a little look for most chances.
Be my guest. But yeah, I'm just thrilled by it because it reminds me a bit, Dan, of when we had a couple of different eras of Gerrard as a Liverpool player. But whenever one or two really good lads have come in, because we had plenty of times where Gerrard played with some real dross, and he's like, well, I've got to go and win this game because no one else is good enough to win it for us. But I remember like when it was 2007-ish when we first signed Bellamy, and we played like a European game, and like Bellamy just took the ball off him and scored, and you can see Gerrard being like, oh, wow, this is class. The couple of seasons with Torres where they both scored loads of goals. When you've got other lads around you, you can trust to win the game for you. Or moreover, I think in Nunes, who you really want to go and win the game for you. That's the beauty for Salah, is that he gets to let go. He gets to delegate winning the football matches a little bit more because you can trust the other lads to do it for
him. 100%, yeah. It looks like it's giving him a new lease of life, to be honest, doesn't it? And we all know, we've all seen, because he's literally tweeted about it, how personally he's taken our downward times since he's been at Liverpool. Like, he's taken it very much on his own shoulders, almost like he's taking responsibility for our downturn in form. And you think, you've still been boss 99% of the time. Like, as a side, we're struggling, but you are one of the few, probably him and Alisson at the time last year, who could really hold their heads up and say, I'm doing my job, what's going on? But Salah didn't really take that attitude. It would have been easy for him to go, well, I'm doing mine. Like, you lot sort yourself out. Yeah, well, he wasn't. He was like, come on, let's do this together.
Cough, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, 100%. Yeah, but he was very much the opposite of that. He was like, no, I'm going to take full responsibility. It's up to me to sort this out, etc., etc. And now all of a sudden, you know, some of the lads that for whatever reason, a whole plethora of reasons, different. Now they've all gone. Those lads who wasn't happening for him. He's got these new lads who think, God, here we go. He's probably thinking 20. He's probably 25 again. He's just joined. Like Klopp's talk about 2.0 at Liverpool, and he's so refreshed and being invigorated by what's going on. Salah's in the same boat, and you can tell it's brought a whole new Mohamed Salah to the table, and it's one that we just love to watch.
Yeah, Chris found it. Brilliant work, Mr. Page. Big chances created so far this season. Top rank, Mo Salah, 6.
Did you know that?
No.
Did you not? Okay.
The second highest is Bruno Fernandes, who's only created 4. Moussa Diaby, 4. Pedro Neto, 4. And Amadou Onana, 4 as well underneath that. So Salah running away with it.
Onana?
To be fair, Morpé missed about 6 1-on-1s in that.
I think it was one of the games they played in.
I really thought you were just teeing up the.
What's his name?
Think. Okay,
yeah. Oh, no.
No. Left hand week 1.
Yeah.
It'll be back.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Lask then, Thursday. I'm enthusiastic about this. I'm going, which helps. I really could do with us putting a little bit of marker down.
Lask. Right, okay.
La, Lask. I could really do with us putting a bit of a marker down here, Chris. How would you approach it?
Because not 11 changes. I think, you know, Harvey Elliott and Kurt Jones, maybe Kurt Jones, I'm not 100% sure on that one. Endo's going to come in there. Oh, actually, maybe I'm thinking about 11 changes here. It's all the, like, Gravenberch probably trying to get him into this side.
I'll tell you what, let's do 11 changes. What does that look like? And then let's work our way backwards.
Is Trent fit?
If he is, right?
That's how you do 11 changes with a right back. I don't see how you do it other than that. That's why I ask.
Okay, that's a good point.
Because I think there's only really Joe Gomez who can play right back for us at the moment.
Unless
you want to talk about Stefan Bajcetic there.
That gets him some minutes.
It will definitely get him some minutes. So we'll find out whether that's something the Klopp wants to do, because right now it's just ideas that people have had, isn't it?
Kelleher?
Mm-hmm. Kostas, Budgetic.
Kostas. Let's go back. Kelleher in goal. Let's say we're going to stick with the box midfield. Mm-hmm. We're saying Kostas does it from the left.
Yeah.
Inverted left. So then, I mean,
I absolutely would not do that.
I can't see Kwanzaa not playing this game.
But Kwanzaa would therefore...
Make you not 11 changes.
Could Kwanzaa then play? I mean,
I think when you're playing, you play left, I think side, if you play with 11 changes, you don't play the box. I think that's crazy.
Let's go 4-3-3. Okay.
Okay. Full, okay.
Then I don't think there is going to be 11 changes.
I don't think any of us think it's possible.
No, I don't. No, I think because of, you're right, because of...
We weren't at our full strength.
Because of Van Dijk, because Kwanzaa's played, he would be... Exactly. I think Kwanzaa... If Kanate had been fit, Kwanzaa would come in, and that would add to the tally, whereas technically you're keeping one, aren't you, from the weekend if he starts. But broadly speaking, you could do... If you're going to go wild changes, because we did it in pre-season with Tsimikas doing the inversion. It was Tsimikas, Kwanzaa, Matip, Bradley, which could be Bacetic potentially,
yeah,
or it could be,
this is no one else, it's Gomez.
Yeah, Gomez midfield, Endo. And any reason why Endo wouldn't start at the end? Well,
Endo, Gravenberch and Elliot probably as your three midfielders.
Yep.
Doke
on the right.
Yeah,
I'd probably give Gakpo another go, because I would be thinking of Nunes for the weekend.
Yeah.
Okay.
And left-hand side, Diaz or Jota?
Once again, I'd rather Diaz start in the Prem game and therefore...
Yeah, I'd go Jota for this.
I'd go Jota.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So Jota, Gakpo, Kwanzaa, Gomez, Matip, staying the same from the weekend?
Yeah.
That's five. So that's six. That would be six changes to make for the Europa League. That actually doesn't feel.
But I don't think they start the West Ham game.
Yeah.
I'm not sure any of them start the West Ham game. Gakpo might be the only one who's a candidate out of them, really. Unless Trent isn't fit again, of course.
Mm. Would you put Trent back in for this one?
No.
What about Van Dijk?
No.
The Van Dijk thing is an interesting one, because he needs minutes, doesn't he? I know he played for Holland during the international break, so he's had some minutes, but do we need to get him back up and running for Liverpool? Possibly. I think we might. Maybe an hour. Do you give him an hour and then take him off from that point, potentially?
Canate is another one. I mean, I'd be keeping him wrapped in cotton wool. I mean, he's just so much better than everyone else, isn't he? You know?
Yeah, it's a balancing act there, because you play Matip twice in a week, the likelihood that he then gets injured.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, hang on a minute, what do we do here? You know what I mean? I want to wrap Kanate in cotton wool, but equally I know that it's a bad thing if I play Matip twice in a week. I would have Van Dijk start. I would have Tsimikas on the left. I would play Joe Gomez on the right hand side personally.
Just do a normal four.
And just normal back four it. The midfield, I think Endo, Gravenberch and Elliot makes perfect sense to me. Mm-hmm. And pick three players. Like, I'm not, like, Doak I'd love to see. I'm not sure he will. I hope he does. I really do. But I also, like, has he had any minutes in the Prem?
He came off the bench, didn't he, against Chelsea?
He came off the Chelsea. Yeah. They didn't suit him at all, but he did come off the bench.
Yeah,
so you think Salah?
No. I try and do something different.
On the right?
Yeah.
Diaz.
Yeah.
I don't know what that looks like.
No, I know, it's mad, but like...
We did start Elliot there against Rangers.
But that was his position, wasn't it?
Previously. By the way, when you said, would I start Salah then? All I said was, I don't think I'd start Doak.
I don't think
Klopp will.
But that immediately says it has to be Salah. For me, it's Salah or Doak on the right. Elliot is one, but then if you want Elliot in the midfield, that obviously doesn't work either.
So. I mean, without seeing the scout report...
You could quite easily put Elliot there.
Hmm.
Yeah,
quite easy.
And keep who in the midfield then? Bajetic is on the 8 potentially. I mean, do that possibly. Yeah.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You keep Szoboszlai in.
Yeah, I mean, he's played. There's only three players who played every minute for us so far. It's Alisson, Robertson, and Szoboszlai.
Which makes you think we'll avoid them at all costs on Thursday.
Maybe. It depends. We don't know how what level these are really at, and this will be a decent marker for it. I think you've got to go out and put 3 points away from home. You just got to go and put a strong foot forward. You can't afford, like the Wolves game, you can't really afford to slip up in this kind of environment, you want to keep the good vibes going. So part of me's going, I think it'll be a much stronger team than I think most of us have, because we all show this like casual disregard for the Europa League as a competition.
When he starts like Origi away at Milan,
oh yeah, yeah,
in the Champions League,
yeah,
you know what I mean. Nat Phillips, exactly. He does rotate heavily.
Did we finish with Max Boltman up front in that?
But what's important here is actually the games around the sixth game in the Europa League. They're the really important ones where you need to give everyone that week off.
Yeah.
So it's important to get a strong start.
This is what I mean. And I wonder whether Salah is just like, how's he feeling? Does he just want to, does Salah just want to play in this competition? Does he, because he'll probably will. There's someone like Van Dijk where I think there's a conversation to be had if he'd not been suspended, where I just don't think he's anywhere near this. And I do the same with Alisson as well, because why risk it? Because you should be able to get by with what's going underneath. But Salah just might just be 60 minutes of Mo Salah, let him run the goals up, and then go ahead, mate, off your pop, go and get a nice half an hour rest and be in decent nick for the weekend. I really don't know. It's a total unknown. It's another unknown in a season and pre-season of total unknowns. You're right. We've put some weakened sides out. Even like, again, to AC Milan at home last season. We started quite weak in that game.
Yeah, we did.
Do you remember Everton, where he loves doing it against Everton as well, specifically?
He's got no
Dom
Solanke up front.
Where's
Pedro Kiravea? This is his chance.
Oh, yeah. But he's always kind of done that. Like, remember the game when Jota got injured and there was no need for him to play?
Michieland or whatever. Yeah.
He's always like, everyone goes, oh, he'll dead play rubber. All the kids, and then all of a sudden the first team, you're like, what the fucking hell's going on? Then he's like, you cannot play him. You can't risk an injury, and then they're all playing. You're like, what the fuck?
I'm pretty sure he mentioned the prize money for winning games of football after that in the Champions League, yeah. And I was nearly sick everywhere.
And also, we all forget we did actually rotate for that game. It was because, like, I think Jota started
Trent
that
captain.
One.
Trent captain that game.
It's funny that, isn't it? So, yeah, interesting decision to make. What would you guys do at home? What 11 are you putting out? Would you make, I mean, as close to 11 changes as you're likely to make? Is there anyone well? There's a mention in the comments for someone like Bobby Clark for Adrian.
Yeah, I love that.
Adrian Apostle, says Bobby Clark. The problem he's got is that, as I said before, you're looking at like he wants to play in an eight at the moment. We just signed Gravenberch when he got a first little glimpse of him at the weekend. Elliot wants to play there. Szoboszlai wants to play there. Jones wants to play there. McAllister wants to play there. When Thiago comes back, he'll want to play there. I'm sure Stefan Bacetic would be knocking on the manager's door and going, I was doing a good job against Real Madrid there in the Champions League last season. So what about me? Lots of decisions. The subs, I think, are where it's going. I've got a sneaky feeling like someone like, we might see Clark and Doak, but there's like a 10-15 minutes to go.
I do want to see Doak, though. I do really want to see Doak.
Yeah.
He's just so electric.
Yes, he's ridiculous. Yeah, that would be very nice indeed. But, you know, we just don't know. They might just look at it and they might have an analysis that goes, you don't need any of the good lads in this one. This is going to sort itself. But yeah,
these are worse than Everton, these.
These are the Austrian Everton. They're not, by the way, because, you know, they're in European competition. right, we're going to be chatting and laughing about Everton. Chatting and laughing about Manchester United, sitting back and having like an approving nod at Tottenham Hotspur and their manager and all the stuff going on there, and loads more as well. The Bias Football podcast follows in about 10-15 minutes time after this, exclusively over on redmanplus.com. and as mentioned, if you want to see our five-a-side footballing exploits, then the Redman Originals five-a-side special is out on Wednesday on Plus as well. So go over there, sign up, fill your boots, and enjoy some amazing extra Liverpool content and video and in podcast. Guys, thank you so much. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Liverpool, for winning. And hopefully they can win another couple of games before we return for another Redman Originals next Monday. Ta-da.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.